the test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear a conversation between two students about buying a used car. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. Answer the questions as you listen. You will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully to the conversation and answer questions 1 to 6.
Hello.
Hello. Can I speak to Eleanor, please?
This is Eleanor speaking.
Hi. My name is Jan. I'm calling about the car that was advertised on the notice board in the Student Union building. Is it still for sale?
Yes, it is.
Your ad says it's a 1985 Celica, in good condition.
It's old, but it has been well looked after. My family has had the car for 10 years. I'm just the third owner and my mother had it before me, so we know its history. We've got all the receipts and records. It's had regular maintenance and the brakes were done last year. It runs really well but looks its age.
Why are you selling it, by the way?
Well, I'm going overseas next month to study. I'll be away for at least 2 years, so I have to sell it, unfortunately. It's been a good car.
You want $1,500, is that right?
I was asking $2,000, but since I need to sell it quickly, I've reduced the price. Would you like to come and take it for a drive? I don't live far from the university.
Yes, I'd like to have a look. What time would suit you?
Any time this evening is fine.
Well, I finish classes at 6 o'clock. How about straight after that? Say 6:30?
Great, I'll give you directions. When you leave the main gate of the university, turn left on South Road and keep going until you get to the Grand Cinema. Take the first right, that's Princess Street. I'm at number 88 on the right.
So it's 80 Princess Street?
No, it's 88 Princess Street and the suburb is Parkwood. You'll see the car parked in front. It's the red one with the for sale sign on it.
Okay, thanks Eleanor. I'll see you later.
Bye.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Later that day, at the university, Jan meets up with her friend Sam and tells him about the car.
Hi, Sam.
Hey, Jan. What's happening?
I'm glad I ran into you. I've decided I have to get a car.
You're going to buy a car? Do you really need one? I'd probably still be driving except that my car broke down last year. Instead of getting another one, I just moved closer to the university and went back to riding a bike. Better for the environment, better for my health, and I save a lot of money.
Did it really cost that much?
Well, when you think of registration, insurance, rising petrol costs, parking plus maintenance and repairs, it adds up.
I know it's going to be expensive, but I really need my own transportation. It takes half an hour by bus each way to university as it is. But now I'm working at night in the city. There's no way I want to hang around waiting for a bus late at night, then walk 3 blocks home alone.
Hey, I think you've got a point there. So what kind of car are you looking at?
It's an 85 Celica, same kind as I used to have. The owner's asking $1,500.
That's pretty old. How many kilometres has it done?
You know, I forgot to ask. I'll have to check tonight when I go to see it. Would you be able to come with me to have a look at about 6:30?
Sure, I'll come. but I don't know a lot about cars. I do know one thing, though. I wouldn't buy an old car without having a mechanic look at it first.
That's a good idea. But won't it cost a lot?
Not really. You can get a check done through the Automobile Association for $80, and it comes with a report on the condition of the car. It can save you a lot of money in the long run.
I'll keep that in mind. So we have to get to Parkwood at 6:30. Do you want to take the bus? It goes straight down South Road every 15 minutes. Or maybe we could walk. I don't think it's that far.
Actually, I could borrow my roommate's motorbike for an hour or so. He's working all evening in the library.
Do you think he'd mind?
No way. He owes me a favour or two.
Okay, great. See you at 6, outside the student centre.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear part of an interview between Dr. Hilsden, a member of staff on a fashion design course, and a student, Julia, who is applying to do the course.
First, look at questions 11 to 13.
Right, Julia. So, from your CV and portfolio, and what you've already told me, you seem to be very much the sort of person we're looking for on the postgraduate course. So tell me, you finished your fashion design course in London 4 years ago. Did you think of carrying straight on and doing a higher degree at the time?
Yes, but there were financial pressures. So I ended up working in the retail industry, as you can see from my CV. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was a very useful experience.
In what way?
Well, I was lucky to get the job with Fashion Now. They're a big store. And one of my priorities was to get as much experience as possible in different areas. So that was good because I had the chance to work in lots of different departments. And having direct contact with the customers meant I was able to see how they reacted to innovation, to new fashion ideas. Because with Fashion Now, a designer might show something in New York or Milan, and there'll be something similar in the shop within weeks. So that was probably the most useful thing for me.
Right. And so what's made you decide to do a postgraduate course now?
Well, while I enjoyed working at Fashion Now, and I learned a lot there, I felt, the way forward would have been to develop my managerial skills, rather than my skills in fashion design, and I'm not sure that's what I want to do.
Yes.
When I was doing my degree in London, I'd been interested in women's wear, but I know that there's been a lot of work done in areas like new fabric construction. And though I'm not intending to go too deeply into the technology, I'd be very interested in looking at how new fabrics could be used in children's wear. So I'd like the chance to pursue that line.
Yes, good. And are you at all concerned about what it's going to be like coming back into an academic context after being away from it for several years?
No, I'm looking forward to it. But I'm basically more interested in the application than the theory. Or at least that's what I've found so far. And I'm hoping the course will give me the contacts and skills I need eventually to set up my own enterprise. I'm particularly interested by the overseas links that the department has.
Yes, many of our students look overseas or to international companies for sponsorship of their projects.
Before the talk continues, look at questions 14 to 20. As you listen to the second part of the talk, answer the questions.
And the facilities here look excellent. I just went to look at the library. It's really impressive. There's so much room compared with the one at my old university.
Yes, most students find it's a good place to study. And there are link-ups to other universities, of course, and all the usual electronic sources. The staff run an information skills program, which we recommend all postgraduates do in the first week or two. Design students find these special collections particularly useful.
Yes.
Then we have a separate computer centre, which has its own academic coordinator, Tim Spender. He's got a background in art design, and the ethos of the centre is that it's a studio for innovation and creativity, rather than a computer laboratory.
Oh, right. I liked the study spaces where students can sit and discuss work together. Very useful for joint projects. We always had to do that sort of thing in the cafeteria when I was an undergraduate. And I read in the brochure that there's a separate resource for photography.
Yes, it's called Photomedia. It's not just for photography, but things like digital imaging and new media. It's a resource for all our students, not just fashion design. And we encourage students to work there, producing work that crosses disciplinary boundaries. It's well used. In fact, it's doubled in size since it was set up 3 years ago. And we also have an offshoot from that, which is called Time-Based Media. This is for students who want to develop their ideas in the area of the moving image or sound. That's in a new building that was specially built for it just last year. But there are plans to expand it, as the present facilities are overstretched already.
Right.
Now, is there anything you'd like to ask about the course itself?
I know it's a combination of taught modules and a specialist project, but how does assessment fit in?
Well, as you'd expect on a course of this nature, it's an ongoing process. The degree course has four stages, and there are what we call progress reviews at the end of each of the first three. Then the final assessment is based on your project. You have to produce a report, which is a critical reflection on your work.
And is there some sort of fashion show?
There's an exhibition. The projects aren't all focused on clothes as such. Some are more experimental, so that seems more appropriate. We ask representatives of fashion companies along, and it's usually well attended.
Right. And another thing I wanted to ask.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turn to Section 3. Section 3. You will hear a discussion between two students and their tutor. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25.
Okay, guys. First off, well done. That was a very good presentation yesterday. Now I'm just going to ask you questions about it before I give you my feedback. Is that okay?
Sure.
Of course.
Right. Well, in that case, tell me, Niall, why did you choose to talk about Rafael Nadal?
To tell you the truth, I didn't. I think I'd better let Sheena handle this one. Sheena?
Yes, it was my decision to pick Nadal. Now, that might be a strange choice for a presentation entitled Someone Who Inspired Me to Study Psychology, but...
Yes, but I was going to say, it does seem rather an odd choice. Was it simply down to the fact that he's a sporting hero of yours and so a role model? You talk about him a lot, Sheena. so this much is clear.
It's true. Nadal is someone I look up to, but my reasons for choosing him were totally professional. You see, I doubt, perhaps in the history of tennis, that there was ever a better match player than him, and that got me thinking, what is the secret to his success? How does he control his nerves so splendidly?
The more we started to look into his background, the more I realised Sheena was right. Nadal was a perfect candidate for this study. He is, on so many levels, a very well-balanced character, and it was fascinating to gain an insight into the mind of this great champion over the last few weeks. I'll admit that I was at first somewhat unsure about whether or not I should back Sheena on this one, but it didn't take long for our research to put us at ease.
So while most of the students were researching Freud and other visionaries in the field of psychology and psychoanalysis, you were looking into a present-day sports star? Does that not strike you as a little odd?
Of course, we knew it was a risk. After all, there was a danger that no one, least of all you, would take us seriously when we stood up on stage and started our presentation. That said, I think it is in the spirit of psychology to be inquisitive and adventurous and not just stick to the conventional. Otherwise, how would the field have come so far, as it has done already?
Well, I must say, your risk certainly paid off. Yours was, without a shadow of a doubt, the most interesting and original presentation I saw. And judging by the reactions of the other students, I would have to say that everyone else was equally impressed.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you think so.
Yes, but notwithstanding your excellent presentation content, we must remember that the marks for this project are awarded based on a number of criteria, and we'll examine those in a few minutes. But first, another question. Where did you find your sources?
Well, and I don't quite know how we managed it, but we were able to secure a face-to-face interview with Nadal while he was over here for the Wimbledon Tennis Championship, so we weren't reliant on newspaper articles and interviews or any other forms of secondary sources. We did, however, find the library's sports archive, an invaluable backup aid to help us fill in the gaps and piece together our interpretation of what makes Nadal such a mentally strong champion.
Before you hear the rest of the discussion, you have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 26 to 30.
Okay. Well, as I said, congratulations again for your excellent work. Now it's time for my feedback. The first area where marks were awarded is in your use of equipment. I felt that had you not been a little too reliant on the overhead projector, and had you, for example, used the interactive whiteboard and audio equipment a little more effectively, you would have received top marks in this section. As things stand, though, your use of equipment was still very satisfactory. It's just a shame, as it was an opportunity missed to score full points. The next area I was asked to assess is content. As you might have guessed, I simply can't fault you on that. Highly original work, so well done. As for your timing, I felt that the two of you were a little too over-rehearsed, so the presentation felt, at times, a little robotic. That said, again, it was very satisfactory, and you would get full points for effort. Sadly, though, there is such a thing as trying too hard, and that cost you top marks here, I'm afraid.
Oh, I see.
Right.
What was particularly impressive, though, was the thick handout you'd prepared for everyone. I took it home to read through it afterwards, and it was very well written. But not alone that, it also enhanced my experience of the presentation itself on the day, as I was able to refer to the handout for further information on what was being discussed and to answer any questions I had, Very nice. As for your level of interaction, well, you had so much that you were intent on packing into your 20-minute time slot that sadly you run out of time at the end, which left no room whatsoever for interaction, and no one had the chance to ask you any questions. You've probably guessed, therefore, that you did worse than average in this department, and unfortunately, your score will have to reflect this.
Oh, my goodness. Everything sounded so positive at the start.
That is a big disappointment. We work so hard.
Now, don't be so quick to get deflated. Remember, your presentation skills only count for 15% of the project grade. Your score in this assessment, even if it were terrible, would still not be enough to prevent you from getting top marks overall. It's very hard to score well in the presentation assessment anyway, so believe me, you both did reasonably well.
Thank you. I wish I felt like that.
Yes, your feedback was very constructive. We're just a little disappointed with ourselves. Why?
That's the end of section three. You have half a minute to check your answers.
Black beer. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 35 on page 126. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 35.
The black bear, or Ursus americanus, has a wide range inhabiting forested areas of North America, including Canada, the United States, and parts of northern Mexico. Black bears are omnivores, getting their nutrition from a wide variety of plants and animals. The particular foods any one bear eats depends on what's available in the area where that bear lives, as well as on the season of the year. Generally speaking, plant foods make up 90% of the bear's diet. The rest of its meals consist of animal foods, such as insects and fish. Bears have a relatively long gestation period. Mating takes place in the spring or early summer, but bear cubs aren't born until the following winter. Usually, two cubs are born at a time, although some litters may have as many as five cubs. Bear cubs are dependent on their mother and may stay with her for close to 2 years. Wild black bears can live as long as 25 years. They've lived for as long as 30 years or more in captivity.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 36 to 40 on page 126. Now listen carefully and answer questions 36 to 40.
Much of the black bear's range coincides with the range of its close cousin, the grizzly bear. Although these bears are somewhat similar in appearance and habits, it isn't difficult to tell the difference between them. Colour isn't necessarily a distinguishing characteristic, as both species of bears occur in a range of colours from almost blonde to dark brown or black. Many black bears, however, have a patch of fur on their chests that's lighter in colour than the rest of their fur. Grizzly bears don't have this patch. Size isn't always a distinguishing feature either, although grizzly bears are usually heavier with an average weight of 225 kilos. Black bears average 140 kilos in weight. Grizzly bears spend time digging in the ground for roots and tubers that make up part of their diet. The large muscles they need for this give them a distinct shoulder hump. This hump is absent in black bears, which don't do the same kind of digging. The shape of the face and ears is also different in each species of bear. Grizzly bears have a depression between the eyes and nose and short, round ears. Black bears, on the other hand, have a straighter profile and longer, more pointed ears. Grizzly bears are known for their fearsome, long, sharp claws. Black bears have shorter claws, which are better suited for climbing trees.
That is the end of section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers.